to Muffin Talk. Kia and welcome to Muffin Talk. Muffin Talk is a weekly radio program to which I invite guests to talk about their work and their passion for issues on community programs, social justice, Bible studies, or interfaith. Today, I've invited Debbie Miller to a Zoom recording for broadcast. Debbie, a warm welcome and hi to my radio program.
Hi.
Debbie Miller is an active member of Beth Shalom, the progressive synagogue, Jewish synagogue in Auckland, and she is a lifetime student of Jewish studies. Last week, she explained a little bit what she meant with lifetime student, and I'm really pleased to have her here in the studio again. And we are going to continue our conversation that we started last week. Last week, we talked about Abraham and Moses, and we touched on leadership in the Bible. And today we would like to go further in leadership because there are some really important leaders in the Bible. We start with Abraham and Moses, and then we have Jacob and David. What is the special thing with leaders in the Bible, Debbie? What do you think?
So I think that it's an interesting thing because there are lots of different models for leadership. And traditionally, we always talk about Abraham as leader, and he was much more of a tribal leader. He took his family, and it seems as if there were lots of people with him, but it was just a family group moving. Moses, by the time he took the people out of Egypt, they were a community. It was, and they also became a nation when they were in the desert. It was a transformative from being a tribe to being a nation. And once we get down the line, we get to David, and they're living in the land of Israel, and he transforms them to like a country with a land and a king. And yes, there was another king before David. There was Saul, but he was a faulty king, where David was actually a very well-respected king. He consolidated the lands, and so it's very different way in which all these different leaders led. And what's interesting, and I guess I wanted to touch on, is why they inspire us and what they teach us as models for leadership. I actually find the fact that they all were faulty, that they all had failings, which is like a traditional thing in the Bible. Nobody's like perfect in the Jewish Bible. They all are like, have human failings, and sometimes we say, oh, they were so amazing, but the truth is they all did really awful things. But, you know, that's what leadership is. You know, you have failings, you have power, and you make mistakes, and then you handle those mistakes, and that's what a good leader is, somebody who can make a mistake and correct it, I think.
Last week you also mentioned about Moses being perfect, and he continued leading in a very special way, and he never made it to the promised land. But he prepared the way, and as you pointed out last week also, that he was the one who communicated directly, we engaged with God, but it was Moses and Miriam who are known for certain actions with the community.
Well, Aaron and Miriam. So what's interesting about Moses is that, and when we're talking about leadership, is that a lot of times we imagine God's voice as being large, so large when they were on Mount Sinai that the people couldn't stand to hear it, right? And they said, oh, no, you just hear him because it's too much for us. So But I oftentimes, there's a thing called the still small voice, which is actually the voice of God that you hear if you're really listening. And so Moses was the one who could really hear God. And maybe God's voice was very small.
Mm-hmm.
And
isn't there a story about one of the prophets who was trying to listen to the voice of God, and he thinks that there's in the thunder or an earthquake, and then it was in the whisper of the wind?
Yep, that's the still small voice. That's the story. So anyway, so Moses wasn't the person who got up and talked to Pharaoh or made the big scene. Moses wasn't the person who got up and talked to the people. That was Aaron. And Miriam wasn't the one. Miriam was the one who, from my point of view, led them in prayer, because Miriam danced after they crossed the sea, the parting of the sea. Miriam led the women in dance, which for me is the beginning of prayer, dancing in joy and celebration before God. That was Miriam's leadership. She was actually leading the women in this joyous celebration of dancing. And so Micha Mocha, which is a famous prayer that we say every day, actually, who is like you, God, who has taken us out of Egypt. And the point is that these leaders each had their skills and their abilities. Miriam inspired us with this joyous dancing. And I think joyous dancing is the most pure form of prayer. And she inspired that. The Bible, and we're going to talk about this in another one, why women's place in the Bible is not so prevalent, but for, I believe at the time that Moses, Miriam, and Aaron were a trifectorate of leadership, and for the people that were following them, they were equally powerful. And Miriam was the one who found water wherever they went. And Aaron was the one who got up in front of everybody. And Moses was the one who could hear the still small voice. He didn't appear. He wasn't the front man.
Yeah,
you know?
It's wonderful how you explain it, because also when you say that Miriam is the one who starts with a prayer, because it's the movement and the rhythm and the sound.
The total joy that comes expression in your body, in your soul, in your mind.
Yes, and then you have Aaron in contrast, who's speaking to your mind and to your wisdom, and to it's the brain part, and then you have the spiritual part with Moses.
Yeah, and Moses actually hears the law; he gets it. This is the way things are going to work. So, why is Moses in retrospect? Why do Aaron and Moses come down to us? Well, that's the discussion as leaders, and Miriam's like pushed to the side. That's a discussion for our other session. But what's really important is, why is Moses the one who inspires us? What does it teach us? It teaches us that, I think, that sometimes the people with the most power need to be the person who is able to hear the real God's voice, you know, really hear it, and also are modest. It takes an incredible person to have the most power and be modest at the same time. Most people, when they get power, are not modest. Power, you know, the famous saying, power corrupts.
Yes.
I mean, it is a very, it's a very dangerous thing to be a leader. It distorts your soul. We take David down the track. I mean, he abused his power by sending Bathsheba's husband to the front so that he could fool around with the wife, you know, and he got killed. And so, and then David took on Bathsheba as his wife. And so, you know, these people made bad decisions. And the prophet called them to task for it, and God called them to task for it. But power can make you lead the people in joy to the city of the Jerusalem with the Torah in your hands dancing. This is David, and Michal criticizes him, you know, you danced before everybody naked, because he was, his robes were flowing, and it implies that he was like not so modest. And he said, you know, I was dancing before God. Once again, this dancing in prayer, obviously this appeals to me, but this leadership where he was bringing the Torah to Jerusalem, the city that was to be the eternal capital. And he was leading this conglomerate of tribes into being a centralized nation, but different from all other nations, because what was central to his activity was the Torah and bringing it to Jerusalem and this holiness. And he got lost along the way at different times. I mean, he made bad decisions because power does corrupt. He wasn't immune to it. This is the man who could fight Goliath and win because he had the brains to figure out where the weak spot was in the giant. You know, the stone, if it hits you in the temple, you're as dead as if you've got 10,000 muscles, you know? That little still stone can kill.
Yeah,
the right place. It's about being clever.
It's the knowledge.
And seeing the weak spot when you're leading. But, and knowing how to, he wasn't the one who was destined to inherit Saul's kingdom. He was the friend of, you know, of Jonathan, but he is the one who did, because the people in a certain sense chose him because he was the right man. It was almost democracy, because against the inheritance rule where the son inherits, he was chosen because he was the one that people saw as the real leader.
So he's a community leader.
Right. He's the leader.
To a leader appointed by God.
That, but he was normally in those societies, just like in England just now, the son inherited the kingship from Queen Elizabeth. Well, David wasn't destined to inherit the kingship. He was not the son. Yonatan was the son. But he did, because he was the people's choice.
Yeah.
And he had this powerful ability to lead armies and fight battles and choose the city and bring the Torah in. And he wrote, well, we attribute a lot of the poetry to David. A lot of the poetry that was written to him. But the truth is, David was the people's choice, and he made, later on in his life, as power corrupts, he made bad decisions.
Didn't he also make music and play the harp?
Yeah, so they say. Yeah. And I that's what the Bible says.
It's almost like having Aaron and Miriam together in David.
Ah, interesting. I didn't think of that. But that those qualities of dancing and seeing and being the front, he definitely had that in front of the people's qualities. He could lead armies. He could, you know, dance with the Torah and bring it to Ruth. He saw that there needed to be a centralized, city of Jerusalem. He had foresight on what needed to be the future of building this nation.
And he certainly had charism.
He was charismatic, yeah, definitely.
And tell me, what do you think is the difference between, from the point of leadership, between David and Jacob?
Okay. Jacob is once again, a really fallible human being. I mean, he is, he, you know, wheedles his way out of his brother's birthright, and he takes what was meant to be, his blessing, and he goes on to once again go on a journey. And so I think this homebody who would make lentil stew, right, and steal his father's blessing to and birthright from his brother, he goes on a journey and he grows. But I also really love Rebecca's point in this, which is the mother of the two twins, and she chooses Jacob as opposed to Esau, because Jacob was the home person. She saw values in him, and I think she was the really guarding one, but we'll talk about that later in the next one of the story about women.
So he was he had the right talents, or
he had the intellect. They talk about Esau as being a baser. The rabbis say that he was a baser human being. He was the one who went out and hunted. And in Judaism, hunting is not, you aren't supposed to eat food that's hunted. You're supposed to eat food that was raised, that was shepherded, that was intended to be taken care of and cultivated, and then you eat part of it. And so the hunter was a wilder, baser individual, whereas they didn't conform to this set of rules and laws. And so it's very much this conscious choice of picking the man who could utilize the agricultural and the goats and the shepherding, and really had more of the skill set to lead a community versus the wild baser instincts of Esau. And I think Rivka saw that and therefore directed Jacob. Rebecca, right. Rivka is Rebecca in Hebrew. So Rebecca saw this and overtook Isaac's misguided choice, which is traditional, but was wrong. And Jacob was chosen. But Jacob wasn't the right person then. He became the right person to lead because he went on, once again, a journey where he fled from Esau and he fled from his home, and he went to Lot, and he got his first wife by mistake, Leah, and then he got his beloved second wife, who he really wanted to get from the get-go, Rachel, and then he got Bilhah and Zilpah because of this really awful competition between the women to see who could have the most children. But whatever the case may be, it was this man who grew from his process. And, you know, when he's fleeing, one of the times he goes and he lies down on the rock and he dreams about the ladder going up to heaven, and he struggles. They say he wrestles with the Malachim,
the angels.
Yeah, that's the word you're going to use. I have a problem with that word because that's a very modern terminology, but what it was some emanation of God, but he struggles, okay? And he comes away with an injured hip. And he's not perfect anymore. He doesn't have this perfect body, but he's changed because of the struggle. We oftentimes, I think this, we look at people who have deformities, like they don't hear, they don't see, they have a disformed leg, they don't have the same colored skin as we do, they're in the poor sect, the untouchables in India. We look down on them. And actually the Bible says, no, the person who struggles with deformity, the person who comes out not perfect and has to struggle, they're the person who actually can see what's really, they see clearer after they have to do with something that's not okay.
But it's also interesting because Jacob wasn't born like this, which means that he knew a different world. And again, as you say, a journey, he's on a journey, but we also talked about opening new horizons and seeing another world. And I think that's what you can also say. Jacob not only left his home where he grew up, but then through this disability or through this imperfection, he discovers another world.
Yeah. And I think when I think about Jacob's wrestling, I think then he came into his real position as a leader. Up until that point, he was self-focused. Once he had to struggle, once he really engaged with God, once you have to overcome something, then. And it changes you from being this self-focused me, me, me to there's more to this than that. Then he becomes the leader that he's supposed to be. He wasn't that leader to begin with.
Again, he's growing, and right. It's, I often think of when I looked at a little butterfly being born, and it's chrysalis, and you think, oh, I'd like to help this butterfly, but if you help the butterfly to get out of the chrysalis, it doesn't develop the whatever it is, the strength that they need then to fly. So it has to go through the struggle to become the beautiful butterfly. And this is also about growing and
strength.
Yeah, it doesn't. I think that they are all tested. You know, David did have a tough life in many ways, and Jacob didn't have an easy life either. And one of our in our sessions about Bible scriptures, we heard that if God speaks to you, if you're a prophet, or if God speaks to you, you'll get a job.
Got work to do. I think I think that's true. I don't know if you get a job, but I think to be human and to be involved with God is to be responsible. The same thing about, you know, but I love this idea that he gets deformed, and he, because of that, he becomes much more. And that these people who live through really difficult stuff, maybe we should be listening to them closer, because they have something, that clarity that maybe we can't get if everything's going okay in our lives.
It reminds me of the sessions that we just had recently about the book of Job, a book of hope. And
you call them Job, the Book of Hope. That's interesting.
No, that's a term that we use for our session. But it's
I think Job, that's interesting. You call it the Book of Hope. I don't see it that way. Very interesting.
Well, it's a question
I'll have to think about that.
Okay, thank you very much, Debbie. We're coming to the end of today's session about the leaders. And I like your points that you made, that these leaders, like, for example, Abraham, were very humble and modest. And that's how they could hear the voice of God. And you also had leaders.
I think that was Moses. Moses was humble and modest.
Yeah. Moses.
Yeah.
And Abraham listened to God, and
he said, I'm here. He could hear it.
Outside of their normal world, outside of their familiar places.
Yep.
Thank you so much. And we'll have another session coming up next week. And it will be interesting to continue with what the Bible tells us, what we maybe have to reread a little bit, so that we see it's not about perfect people in the Bible. It's really, it's realistic. And that's why it's still relevant today after so many years. It will never become obsolete, I think. And so for our next sessions, that we have four consecutive Tuesdays starting on the 27th of June from 12:30 to 1:30 with Leticia Putin-Padat, and we'll talk about focus on target, draw fresh momentum. And these are four sessions to stop and reflect on where we are heading. The sessions are positive and interactive, and each session lends itself to the next one. And then we come in July and in August, we have sessions about beauty in Islam on the 22nd of July. And then we'll have eight sessions on the women in the Bible starting in August with Brother Kieran. And more details will follow. For more information and any current and past programs, please check out www.studyjoy.nz. Kia kaha and keep safe. And thank you, Debbie.
There are pieces calling in the bonds of love we meet, for the world a new day dawning and shines a light to greet. We're singing, this is the day when the hope was calling, this is the day when the light did shine, this is the day. Can you hear the call of the prophet?